Good evening, everyone. Just making sure we have all our ducks in a row here. Okay, there we are. Well, welcome once again. It's Tuesday, October 3rd already. It's almost Christmas. I heard today that there is going to be a $7 trillion shopping season for Christmas this season, and it is going to be the best shopping season ever. That's what I heard on Fox News today. They were so full of it today, it was just unbelievable. I had to run our new kittens down to the vet for their first set of inoculations. Yes, unfortunately, the cats need vaccines. Heartworm and all those good things, distemper, whatever. So I drove down listening to the kittens crying in their little cat carrier box, the three of them. And I'm listening to Fox, and then I had to go out to the parking lot and wait for them for their procedures, and I was listening to Fox, and I was listening to Fox driving home. I gotta tell you, it was like Abbott and Costello. Who's on first? That routine. It was just moronic. They brought on one so-called expert after another, you know, the CEO of this investment fund and this fund, and talking about hedge funds, talking about treasuries, the bond market. We're going to talk about CERN tonight, collisions, CERN collisions, as I promised on Sunday. I have a whole slew of slides to share with you. But I have to say this, the bond market spiked up today higher. And these pundits, these so-called experts, they, to a person, and again, I was listening to this for over an hour, they kept trotting these people out saying, oh, the bond market is a great buying opportunity. A buying opportunity. Now, I'm not licensed to give financial advice. I can just relay the humor that I find in it. With all that you know about the bond market, the global economy itself, with all that we know about deficit spending, about derivatives, about divesting in bonds, all of these things that are going on, and they have the audacity to bring so-called experts out saying this is a buying opportunity. This is a great time to get into the bond market. In particular, to get into the long bond market. That would be 30-year treasuries. That means unless you sell a 30-year bond, your money is tied up for 30 years. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't think we're going to be here very much longer. So, from my personal financial assessment, not advice to anybody, I would never, if I had the money to invest, even if I even had the proclivity to invest in the bond or the stock markets or any other market, how can anyone with a straight face say this is a buying opportunity in the bond market? Because what overshadows this? It's deficit spending. We have a $33 trillion government deficit, government debt in this United States. Knowing that one fact, what the U.S. government debt is, just knowing what the debt is all that I need to know, and I would assume the same on your part, that buying government debt, which is treasuries and bonds, is not a good idea. You're not helping it. If this were sort of like an intervention for someone who was on drugs, alcohol, whatever, and they were making a valiant effort to get sober, then you would support that effort. But the U.S. government is not trying to get sober with respect to their spending. Quite the opposite. They're trying to get more inebriated. They're trying to shoot up more. They're trying to spend more. So if one were to say, oh, buy bonds because you're supporting the reduction in government deficit, reducing the debt, you're doing your part, you're supporting the government spending. Well, the problem is they take your money and run with it and continue to run up the debt even beyond what anybody contributes in the way of purchasing bonds. So this is criminal activity on the part of these so-called experts and Fox News. They're complicit in this criminal activity. They are deliberately misleading people into thinking the bond market is a safe place for their money. They don't bother to go in to say why the yield is so high and the market prices for bonds are so low. They don't bother to get into talking about divestment by company or countries like Japan and China. They don't bother to talk about why the bonds even exist, which is deficit spending. No. They're saying, oh, you can make a lot of money. This is a great time. It's high yield. Well, I had a wonderful conversation with one of our subscribers today. And I urge all of you, if you've not had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with little old me, because you're in the talking tiers, please do so. Please take advantage of that. Ask the questions that you've wanted to ask, or pass on information to me that you've wanted to send this direction. But in this conversation, the question came up towards the end. What about the yield in bonds? Is that a good indicator as to when the bond market is going to collapse? Does it need to go up 7, 8, 9, 10% yield to be an indicator that the bond market is about to collapse? And I said, the yield is irrelevant, a word I use an awful lot here, because it's a lagging indicator. It's an after effect. It's a result of something that went before. What went before is you couldn't find any buyers at 4.5%, so you raise it to 4.79%. It spiked up today. And it spiked up because the government's getting desperate to find buyers, so they spiked the yield up to attract buyers. The yield is an indication that the government cannot find anybody to buy their bonds. Everybody's running for the hills trying to sell their bonds. So the yield spikes up. That's an after. That's a result of a lack of buyers. So the leading indicator that I offered, and I again offer to you, is look at the dollar figures in terms of what divesting, what selling of bonds is going on. You can target Japan's selling. You can target China's selling, United Kingdom, Germany, and so forth. Whoever it is that is divesting of bonds, it's a matter of public record. You can see what the dollar figures are. That's your bellwether. That's your barometer. That's your leading indicator, is what are the bonds selling for in the process of divesting of bonds? Because remember, if you're going to sell a bond, whether you're U.S. Treasury or you are a country who's holding bonds that you previously purchased and you're trying to divest yourself of them, you have to have a price that is attractive to potential buyers. No different than anything else in the economy. Look at the offering price. Like real estate, you're offering a house for sale and a potential buyer comes in and makes an offer and they present their offering purchase price that begins with the seller's offering of a sale price. So look at those sale prices. U.S. government or any other government, what's the attractive sale price? Forget about the yield. That's a lagging indicator. So there's economics 101 for the night. We're going to talk about CERN. We're going to talk about physics. But really, we're talking spiritually about physics, about quantum mechanics. We're going to look at the trailer, the promotional video for the 2015 music video produced by CERN themselves called Symmetry. I've made reference to this video many times. So I'm going to show you the trailer tonight. I'm also going to show you an image. We're also going to look at the Gothard Tunnel, which is about 275 kilometers from CERN itself in Switzerland, as CERN is. And we're going to look at an image from the opening ceremony, an image of the opening of the abyss. And this is the ritual that you've all seen from 2016 for the Gothard Tunnel opening. So I think it's a 15 kilometers? I'll have to look. Anyway, it's a long tunnel. Took them 17 years to build it. 25 kilometers, I think, is the length of the tunnel. At any rate, most all of you are familiar with that ceremony, but we're going to touch on that a little bit because we're dealing with the spiritual side here tonight more than the physics. I'll define symmetry for you and all those good things. We're also going to look at a slideshow of many of the computer graphics direct from CERN headquarters itself. I wasn't able to share those with you on Sunday, but we'll do it tonight. Probably about 20 different slides, so bear with me. We're going to go through quite a few of these, but I'll just do them rapidly. Just going to tell you what it is you're looking at and what the significance is of what we're looking at. Overall, what they're doing is they're still preparing for high luminosity collisions. They're not there yet. They're calibrating, they're testing. We're not to the Big Bang yet, we could put it that way, okay? But when they really start going with full power, I will definitely present it here. As I mentioned in the last live stream, tomorrow is the U.S. government's emergency broadcast system test. We are acknowledging our own overkill, but what we are doing after we sign off tonight is we're putting our computers and our cell phones in a Faraday cage, and they will not be turned on until around dinner time tomorrow, Wednesday. So the broadcast here in the East Coast of the U.S., I think it's 2:25 p.m. or something like that. We've got other things to do. We don't need to play with the infrastructure of the beast system. We're taking the day off from the beast system. Interestingly, they say that if they're not able to broadcast the test tomorrow, they will do so on October 11th. Interesting number, right? 11? We'll see what they do. I'm not overly concerned about it, but as I often say, be prudently prepared. Lots of people are running around saying the sky is falling. I'm not worried about it. They're going to do what they're going to do. Doesn't matter. We put our faith and our trust in God and His plan for all of us. Okay? Anyway, again, it's like Abbott and Costello. Who's on first? What a brilliant comedy routine that was. Okay, let's go on to something that's not quite as brilliant, but let's go to the symmetry video. Let's see if this is my... Yep, that's not symmetry. Got a couple of things over here in the bullpen that I'm getting ready. Here it is. to move out of the way. This is a, it's ever since they updated my broadcasting software, it's taking a little getting used to. Okay, I'm back with you. It takes me a couple of moments to just click through the different functions here in order to get back with you. So I appreciate your patience with it. This is the Gothard Tunnel. Note the three beetles superimposed on the screen over the demon. That demon is actually supposed to be a goat, an ibex goat. The ibex goat is prominent in the Swiss Alps. That image, as far as I'm concerned, is the portal. It's the image of the opening of the abyss. And there are multiple images that come up on this screen, which is a projection screen outside the tunnel, where they were conducting the other parts of the ritual. These three beetles were lowered by cables. These are actually actors lowered across the face of this projection screen. These are the scarab beetles of Egypt, of the sarcophagus, the sarcophagi of the pharaohs. This represents immortality. Ye shall be as gods. This whole Gothard Tunnel ritual in 2016 was all about opening the abyss at the neighboring CERN facility. It's not a pleasant video to watch. That's why I'm not presenting it here tonight. Bad enough we just looked at the trailer for Symmetry from CERN, but the Gothard Tunnel ritual is extremely disturbing to watch. So if you have not seen it, say your prayers first for protection, and then watch it with your spiritual eyes. I'm over on my other screen getting rid of this. There we are. Now, I'm not going to do a big review on CERN itself. You all have been here for many years, and you've heard me talk about CERN at length in the past, so we don't really need to do that. Like I said at the beginning, I want to stay with more of the spiritual. Here's something that really is rarely ever mentioned about CERN and the people operating the facility. Each of the directors, historically, of CERN over the years, since they broke ground in 1953 was the actual date, not 1954, as it is often reported. But each of the directors has been a Jesuit. Okay? That's fairly well known. What is seldom mentioned or discussed sounds a little bizarre. And I have been accused over the years of being a bizarre person. And that's okay. As I mentioned to you, Doug Hagman even asked me, did somebody drop you on your head when you were born? Remember that reference that I cited with you about a month ago? No matter. Behind the scenes, obviously these are Luciferian objectives, Luciferian worshipers. Certainly they are Kabbalists. And their view, their paradigm of the universe and the quantum mechanics of the universe comes straight out of Kabbalism. Part of that is not only the worship of Apollo, Apollyon, Abaddon, the destroyer from the underworld, from the abyss, but the worship of Apollo, the sun god, but also Saturn. And this is where it gets rather bizarre. There is a mythos known as the Golden Age of Kronos. That myth, put very briefly, is that supposedly Saturn, Venus, Mars, and the Earth moved through the heavens, through the universe together. All of them enveloped in a purple haze, a plasma envelope, an energy envelope, such that there was no darkness. That there were humans on the Earth at the time, and that they worshiped Saturn. And they called it Kronos because they measured time by Saturn. And eventually, this group of planets moved together within our solar system, were electromagnetically attracted by the sun, not gravitationally. And there was an alignment of Saturn to the Earth, with the Earth in close proximity to Saturn, such that cave dwellers all over the world have etched into the rock what they saw in the heavens during those times. And these were plasma discharges known as Birkeland currents. Interestingly, Birkeland currents are a double helix. They look like DNA, double-stranded DNA, with a right-hand twist. I call these a plasma conduit. There were electrical discharges from the southern pole of Saturn to the Earth, the surface of the Earth itself. An ancient man observed this in the heavens and recorded it on cave walls, and they're still visible today. So there's some physical evidence to this, and this is, again, the electric model of the universe. But this is the myth side of this. In worshiping Saturn, which represents Satan, the mythos, the belief system, is that the governors of the fallen angels, themselves fallen angels. The leadership are imprisoned within Saturn itself. Now, I know this sounds very bizarre. I'm just reporting. And this is where CERN comes in. If you recall, and I should have an image up, but if you recall, several years ago, there was a spiral that appeared over Norway. If I recall, that was in 2017. When you look at the photographs of that spiral over Norway, while CERN was operating during run two, or now in run three, just starting run three, during run two, this spiral appeared in our atmosphere. When you look at that image, it is identical to the photographs taken by the former Cassini probe, the Cassini satellite, when it photographed the southern pole of Saturn. The southern pole of Saturn appears as a spiral. Cassini also took photographs of the northern pole of Saturn, which many of you know appears as a hexagon. And it has oppositely moving clouds, energy clouds. These are particles that are naturally undergoing acceleration. Clouds that move clockwise and counterclockwise. The northern pole of Saturn is modeled at CERN. The northern pole of Saturn is a particle accelerator and collider. You've heard me talk about synchrotron energies, gamma rays, and hard X-rays, and also the magnetic lines of force from the superconducting magnets. These are operating at about 8 Tesla, 8 times the gravitational force of our planet. The naturally occurring synchrotron at the northern pole of Saturn does the same thing, produces gamma rays, X-rays, and magnetic lines of force. It also produces electricity, electrical discharges, plasma discharges. It produces a Birkeland current that passes through from the northern pole through the center, through the core of Saturn, to the southern pole. When you look at a Birkeland current, which is easily reproduced in the laboratory, they've also been observed by the Hubble Space Telescope, light years in length, naturally occurring, again reflecting the electric model of the universe. Birkeland currents, if you look at them in a cross section, if you were to cut one, like cutting DNA, and look at the end of a Birkeland current, the double helix, it forms a spiral. Because it's a helix. That's what a spiral is. So the spiral photographed by Cassini, the probe, at the southern pole of Saturn, is actually the end of a Birkeland current generated at the North Pole by a naturally occurring synchrotron particle accelerator / collider. Now, let's connect that to CERN as a particle accelerator and collider. Because you have a ring, and the particles are moving in opposite directions in a circular trajectory, they also produce Birkeland currents from the center point. It begins as a torsion field. This is like taking an aluminum soda can, grabbing the top and grabbing the bottom and twisting it in opposite directions. That's a torsion field, okay? When CERN is running at full power, full luminosity, full collisions are occurring, which they did in run 1, 2, and they will with run 3. They are producing this torsion field. And out of the torsion field is produced a Birkeland current. That's why there was a spiral over Norway. That Birkeland current in cross-section was visible as that electrical conduit, that electrical current, two strands of oppositely charged particles accelerated through the atmosphere, and we were looking at the tail end of that Birkeland current as it was leaving, as it was projected through the atmosphere, impacting, remember my discussion about gamma rays and X-rays, in particular gamma rays, impacting the particles of our atmosphere and functioning as particle colliders. Okay? Same thing when the electrical current is produced at CERN, projected out through the atmosphere, striking the atmosphere like a cosmic energy. And as it leaves, we see the tail end of it, like the tail end of a rocket. When we see a rocket going through and it's exiting our atmosphere and going out into an orbital trajectory around the Earth, we see the rocket motors as it's leaving us. That's what the northern spiral, the spiral in Norway was the Birkeland current leaving the Earth, revealing its cross-section as a spiral. This is all part of their achieving their myth, realizing their myth. And that myth is to recreate the golden age of Kronos, the golden age of Saturn. They want to, first of all, electrically reconnect the Earth to the southern pole of Saturn, recreating what is on the cave walls of plasma discharges from Saturn to the Earth. Now it's from the Earth to Saturn. What's the purpose of doing that? It's to release their governors from the prison within Saturn itself. This is their myth. It's not my story. But this is the goal at CERN. So when we hear about opening the doorway to the abyss and that the machine is sitting in the ancient Roman temple site to Apollo, does it mean that the doorway opens up to the interior of our Earth? Or does it mean that they're opening the prison in the center of Saturn itself? Food for thought. I want to go to our scripture for tonight, which we shared in the last live stream as well. Revelation 20. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven with the key to the abyss, holding in his hand a great chain. He seized the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he threw him into the abyss, shut it, and sealed it over him, so that he could not deceive the nations until 1,000 years were complete. After that, he must be released for a brief period of time. When 1,000 years are complete, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to assemble them for battle. Their number is like the sand of the seashore. And they marched across the broad expanse of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints in the beloved city. But fire came down from heaven and consumed them. And the devil who had deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, into which the beast and the false prophet had already been thrown. There they will be tormented day and night, forever and ever. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that the myth, the mythos of Saturn, Saturnalia, the worship of Saturn by the Pope and others, I don't know if the abyss is Saturn. I don't know if the lake of fire is Saturn. I don't know if the myth is accurate. I don't know if this is actually part of the agenda behind the scenes at CERN, except that we have Sergio Bertolucci saying they're going to open a doorway and send something through, and they're not sure what's going to come back through that door. Well, it could be that it is the governors of the fallen angels coming back through that doorway. Sure sounds like he was talking about their Golden Age of Kronos agenda item. We shall see. I have another short video I'd like to share with you tonight. Getting it set up here on my preview screen. And this is Brookhaven National Laboratory, where they have a synchrotron accelerator and collider. They produce strangelets in Brookhaven, New York, just like they do at CERN in Geneva, Switzerland. Okay, here's Brookhaven. Come on, hold still. There it is.
Of our newborn universe. By using one of the most complicated and powerful machines on the planet, scientists have found a way to glimpse back to the very beginning of time itself. This time machine is a particle accelerator, and it gives us a peek at the soup of our newborn universe. Just moments after the Big Bang, our universe was a very different place. It started out so small, dense, and hot that the building blocks of our reality, atoms, couldn't even form yet. The ingredients of atoms, protons and neutrons, were broken down into their most fundamental building blocks, quarks. These quarks floated around in a perfect fluid, along with the particles that carry the force that holds them together inside of their proton and neutron homes. Those particles are called gluons. Scientists name this universe-creating fluid quark-gluon plasma. It hasn't been found in nature since the beginning of time as we know it, but scientists can recreate it inside particle accelerators. It was officially observed first at the Brookhaven National Laboratory in Long Island, where researchers used the Relativistic Heavy Ion Collider, or RIC for short, to smash atoms together. RIC's 2.4-mile-long ring speeds atomic nuclei around its massive circle 80,000 times a second at 99.995% the speed of light. They are steered in this ring by massive superconducting magnets cooled down to near absolute zero. At several points along the path, the two opposing beams of nuclei intersect and collide. The crashes give rise to explosions of particles, as well as to tiny droplets of quark gluon plasma. Here at Brookhaven, there are two collision points where detectors can watch the action. S Phoenix and Star. S Phoenix is brand new, and Star just got upgrades to make it more sensitive than ever. Each detector is like an onion, with layer upon layer of nested detectors, wires, cooling tubes, and electronics, pulling massive amounts of data, tracking and detecting particles' energies and motions. At the core of each device is a powerful superconducting magnet that can bend charged particles and identify particles of different masses. These measurements can reveal secrets about the quark gluon plasma, giving us a deeper understanding than ever before of how the tiniest bits of matter behave. By studying this quark soup, scientists are learning about our primordial cosmic origins and the matter all around us.
Okay, we're back. Sorry about jumping the video back and forth like that. Had to get the audio to cooperate with me. At any rate, Brookhaven is a small-scale version of CERN's Large Hadron Collider. I've often referred to Brookhaven National Laboratory and their relativistic heavy ion collider as a proof of concept facility where they will take theories and convert them to experiments and take the results, take the procedures, and forward it on to CERN to be scaled up and to be further realized. Back in 2018, correction, back in 2015, Brookhaven published a paper in August of that year that confirmed what I began talking about in March of that year, which was the topic of strangelets, a quark gluon condensate. About 6 months prior to the publication of the paper, I had been picking up little bits and pieces here and there in the scientific discussions that strangelets perhaps were being produced and the dangers of strangelets that we've covered here, and that perhaps they were being produced at Brookhaven whenever they crossed the threshold, the tera electron volt threshold of 10 tera electron volts. Last live stream I shared with you that CERN is anticipating 10.72 TeV from the first collisions of ions of lead, which will begin here in a matter of just a few days. So crossing the threshold, strangelets are produced. I shared with you the press release from CERN in the last live stream where they openly say the primary focus, the primary objective in run three is the production of strangelets. They call them quark gluon condensate or a quark gluon plasma, but they are also referred to as strangelets. So they are now focusing all their energies on producing what they consider to be the most explosive substance in the known universe, giving rise to the Higgs boson itself in their theoretical Big Bang timeline. There was the singularity that exploded, and then strangelets. And then strangelets exploding and giving rise to the Higgs boson and the Higgs field, and so forth and so on. I don't ascribe to the Big Bang, but that's what I'm reporting on. We know spiritually that Satan intends to try and kill God and his angels. My theory, my working theory is, if they can be theoretical physicists, I can be a theoretical person myself. My theory is their attempt to kill God will involve using strangelets. Strangelets will predate that event because I think they will be used to open the doorway to the abyss, to blow a hole. As I said in the last live stream, as Einstein, in describing relativity, described the universe, the cosmos, as a time-space continuum. And tearing a hole in that continuum, renting the veil, my theory is they could do that with strangelets. I think we're again seeing another indication as to how close we are to the Antichrist, to the beginning of the Great Tribulation, the last 3.5 years that Jesus Christ cuts short when he returns. Nonetheless, the abyss is opened. Revelation will be fulfilled. It doesn't talk about CERN. It doesn't talk about particle colliders. But it does talk about the lake of fire, fire and brimstone, sulfur, right? When they self-destruct, as demonstrated in their own music video, Symmetry, when they self-destruct the machine at what I consider to be the power level of not tera electron volts, but peta, 20 peta electron volts, they're going to release fire and brimstone. They're going to open that doorway, and that's what's going to come through. That's what Revelation is describing, the opening of the abyss. Does that involve Saturn? I don't know. And quite frankly, I don't care if it involves Saturn or not. I don't care if there are Birkeland currents. I don't care if there's, you know, a Norway spiral at the Southern Pole. I don't care if there are governors. I only care about what God is leading us to do, what he's sharing with us, what he's teaching us, the wisdom that is given to us because of salvation through Jesus Christ's sacrifice for us. That's all I care about. Okay, so they can go on with their mythos and their games and their agendas, and they can blow this up and they can blow that up. I'm not concerned about it. Yes, the play on word, concern. Yeah, I get it. At any rate, let's look at some of the graphics that I promised to show you. These are the computer graphic images of their computer systems at CERN. So this will be a slideshow. Let me get my little camera thing out of the way. Oh, this thing is clunky. There it is. Okay, you're looking at what the scientists look at CERN. And I'll translate these things. If we look at the bottom left-hand corner, RF, that's radio frequency. Those are the paddles. Those are the things that actually impart more energy on accelerated particles as they move through what are known as radio frequency cavities, RF cavities. I've described them as ping pong paddles, and every time a bunch of particles comes by, in this case ions of lead, that paddle smacks the backside of a bunch and accelerates it. Very much a layman's description. But these are radio frequency cavities. They both pull and then push on individual bunches that are separated by a time distance of 25 nanoseconds. Every time they go through the RF cavity, they get accelerated. They had an issue, they had a problem, and now they're talking about we will go for the 899 bunch fill. So they're filling the pipe, they're filling the beams, filling the beam lines with bunches. The bunches are made up of hundreds of thousands of ions of lead in each bunch, okay? This is showing on in the middle here, this stair-step graphic. Red is one beam line, blue is a second beam line. And up here, one beam line achieved just over 5,000 teraelectron volts and upwards of 7,000 teraelectron volts in the blue beam line. This is just acceleration energy. It is not collision energy. This is not showing you any luminosity at this point. Okay? So the date, because you'll always see this on this graphics, upper right-hand corner. So this is European date. So 10 is obviously October. 3 on the left is today's date, the 3rd, and then of course the year is 23, followed by the time in military time, 22:33:11. So that would be in military time, that would be, or in 12-hour time, it would be civilian clock, would be 10 o'clock, 10:30 and 11 seconds at night, okay? Alrighty, let's go on to our next graphic. This is a diagram of the main ring of the Large Hadron Collider. Up at the top, you see CMS, that's a compact muon solenoid detector. You see here where it says dump, that is indicating a magnetic gate that opens that allows the accelerated particles to escape the beam line and be dumped. Cleaning just simply means what it means. It means in these sections, there will be a cleaning up of the beam lines themselves. Typically, they are eliminating scattering particles and re-bunching, recompressing, collimating the beam lines, as it's called. This next one is the LHCB, B for beauty, beauty quark. This is another detector. At the bottom is ATLAS, the next detector. And finally, ALICE. The ALICE detector is the one that was shown in the dance video, the music video, Symmetry. When you saw the dancers standing up on top of what looked like a concrete block, they were overlooking the ALICE detector. Now, strangelets can be produced in the ALICE detector. That's the primary location for the production of strangelets, but also in ATLAS and CMS, okay? So that's a quick overview. That's looking from the top down over the main ring of the Large Hadron Collider. I mentioned the last live stream, the shields of the Earth, the magnetosphere. So on the right is the magnetosphere that is surrounding the shield surrounding the Earth in the center. Obviously, to the left is the sun, and they are depicting accelerated protons leaving the sun directed towards the shields surrounding the Earth. This is a magnetic shield. You have a positive pole at the North Pole, providing the stream going to the top, and towards the bottom is the Southern Pole. These get deformed by the magnets, the superconducting magnets at CERN when they're running at full power. You'll see this change shape and actually see a hole in the magnetosphere and the magnetopause, an inner layer, okay? This is CMS, compact muon solenoid. This is one of the detectors. This is at the top of that diagram we were looking at. This shows you a computer representation of the colliding of particles, the release of smaller particles, the fragmentation. What you're looking at is the luminosity, the number of fragments. Luminosity refers to the number of particles released due to a collision, okay? This occurred, was recorded on the 26th of September during one of the test runs, one of the test phases, okay? Another one of the ion physics stable beams on the left-hand side, they're showing, again, the intera electron volts, the amount of energy in the beam line itself. So no collisions going on here, but this is measured in giga electron volts. So 6,799 giga electron volts. When you convert that to tera electron volts, it's 6.799. When you multiply that twice, it gives you the 13.4, approximately 13.4 tera electron volts, because they merge the energy from both beams to come up with the total energy release. Okay. So bottom left hand corner where they have the comments posted, first stable beams with heavy ion beams in run three with crystal collimation. Collimation means parallel beam lines. They want those beams to be aligned as perfectly as they can achieve. So collimation takes place in a collimator. So within one of the detectors, typically CMS, they will have a collimator which aligns the beams in parallel fashion to one another. And that's all about aiming and steering the beams. What you're looking at now is the accelerator mode. They are in active filling scheme, so they're adding more bunches of ions of lead into the beam lines, of which there are two. When you see Atlas, Alice, CMS, and LHCb, these are the detectors, and they are showing the alignment of the beams as they are filling, and the alignment is reflected over here where you see Lumi centroid and things like that. These are the measurements within the pipe of where the beam line is located. Here again, they're talking the ramping up. So this is the filling of the beam lines. The more bunches, that's the ramping up of the number of bunches and therefore the yield in electron volts that is given here. It says in comments, the RF issue solved, we will go for the 899 bunch fill now, as was reflected earlier. Okay, so I'm just going to march through these fairly quickly. This is a cross section looking into the Atlas detector. This is indicating a collision, a test collision that took place, and you can see the luminosity in the center. The beam line is dead center, the collision point, and then radiating out in all directions from that, well, I shouldn't say all directions, but orthogonal at right angles directly away from the point of contact are these fragments. The upper right-hand corner shows a cross-sectional view as you're looking into the Atlas experiment, the detector. Arrayed around in the green ring are the detectors, the charge coupled devices, digital cameras, and then around that will be the magnets and the computer detector transfer equipment. Here we're showing the two beam lines, okay? Beam one on the left, beam on number two on the right. In blue in the center, it says standby. So that's the mode that they are in right now. The beam dump, if it needs to be used, is armed. So if they suddenly have to trigger a dump because one of the fail-safe systems indicates a fault, they will dump the beam. They will allow the accelerated particles to exit the beam lines and strike a fixed impact point to absorb their energy. Okay? So everything's in idle mode right now. This is the detector control system. Again, you have Alice here. You have the overall status of the Large Hadron Collider's main ring. So it's in ramp up status. The Alice detector, which is where the strain slits will be produced, they are in permit mode, which means they're ready to take collisions. The injection permits are in standby. And the dipole beam is in permit status. That's a dipole magnet, which allows for the steering of particles that are accelerated as they go through the radio frequency cavities for acceleration. The detectors here are all in standby mode. They're ready to go. That's not active. That's okay. Again, looking at the ALICE superconducting magnets, this is the control panel. The magnets are on, the solenoid and the dipole magnets themselves are activated. Now, this is looking at the cross-section of the two beams. In the upper left-hand corner, you see beam 1 and beam 2. You're looking down the pipe as if you could open the pipe and look at the beam line inside of it. And this is how they steer the beam towards the center point of each beam in an effort to avoid collision with the inner lining of the pipe. So there are two pipes, two beam lines, and they need to steer these beams of particles into the center point. This is how they gauge that. Okay? Again, beam 1 and beam 2, you're actually looking at the computer image of the beam. And so you see the amplitude coming up from the floor and from the side of the pipe. So as these amplitudes are in alignment, they are aligning the center of that beam to the center of the pipe, okay? So they have a couple of steering images. This is the ALICE detector where most of the strange look production will be taking place. When we saw symmetry, there's a flat portion to the detector, but they were not up here at the top at that flat portion. Imagine where we are standing as the position where those dancers were standing on that white portion, looked like a block of concrete. They were standing on that part of the ALICE detector and looking towards what we're looking at. This is the inside of the ALICE detector. The left and right side doors are to our left and right, the red doors, and those swing shut and seal this off. The beam lines move right through the center of this blue area. That blue area, that circle, are the detectors themselves. And if you look down a little bit from the center point, you'll see a couple of human figures, engineers in there working, and that'll give you a sense of the scale. It is a large machine. Overall, it's about 3 stories tall and multiple tons in weight. Here are the dance figures. And to their left, going to our left, is what we were just looking at in the previous image. So why did they pick the ALICE detector? Did it happen to have this nice flat area as a dance floor? No, it's because they're dancing in celebration of symmetry. Strangelets. Okay? Symmetries in particle physics. Symmetries play an important role in particle physics. The mathematical description of symmetries uses group theory, and examples of which are SU2 and SU3, symmetry universal 2 and 3. There is a relation between symmetries and conservation laws, which is known as Noether's theorem. Examples of this in classical physics are, and there's 3 bullet points, the symmetries, invariance under change of time. That is known as conservation of energy. There is an invariance under translation in space, which is conservation of momentum. There is an invariance under rotation, which is conservation of angular momentum. Remember when we talked about the planets orbiting the sun and that they are electromagnetically held to their orbital pathways, and it is a balance between their angular momentum and the electromagnetic pull, not gravity, but electromagnetic pull of the sun, trying to pull the planets into the sun, but they resist the pull of the sun in balance due to their angular momentum, their conservation of energy, and their conservation of that momentum. such that once a particle moves from a state of rest and is acted upon by an outside force, and it begins to move, that particle will continue to move in a straight line trajectory unless acted upon by an outside external force. If that force happens to be electromagnetism, then it will try to change that direction of that object that is in motion, which wants to continue moving in a straight line. It tries to deviate that with electromagnetism. But because of angular momentum and conservation of momentum, symmetry, the planet, the object, still tries to move in a straight line. So you end up with a curved orbital pathway around the sun. Okay, so that's just a quick overview of symmetry. What they're trying to demonstrate in this ballet, in this dance, is that there is a balance of movement. There is a continuous symmetry to movement, that the movement remains in balance and remains the same. That's classical physics at this point. They're trying to determine new physics. They're trying to see the violation that may exist to symmetry, that there is an asymmetry to the universe. I would sum that up as they're trying to find the negative in the universe. God operates in a balanced fashion. God has symmetry. They're trying to find the asymmetry, the counterfeit, the opposite, the mirror. That's what the video demonstrates. Okay, I think that is, those are all my slides. So I will come back on here in just a second. There we go, get rid of that. There we are. Sitting here with my CERN shirt on. You've seen this before. Remember the weasel, all right? Here, let's turn that down. Remember the weasel. You know the story of the weasel. It chewed through the electrical cables, shut down CERN. Remember the weasel. My dogs are not in here. They're out playing with the kittens. Anyway, there we go. Okay, I mentioned in the last live stream there are four primary forces in nature. The four fundamental forces: gravity, electromagnetism, the strong and the weak nuclear forces. Now, the strong force and the weak nuclear force, they're only relevant within the scale of an atom. So picture proton and electron and neutron and how they interact with each other, or neutrons interacting with each other. A nucleus interacting with neutrons, protons, and electrons. At that scale, the strong and the weak nuclear forces apply. Beyond the atom, we're dealing with gravity and electromagnetism, okay? Gravity, the force that draws objects together. This is their theory, not mine. I hold to the electromagnetic model. Nonetheless, let's read their words. Gravity, the force that draws objects together, can be understood as bends and curves in the fabric of space. Anything with mass makes these dents. From the Earth and Moon to turtles and cats. Okay, well, great. This is NASA talking, right? Never a straight answer. So supposedly, These are bends and curves in the fabric of space-time. I've always had a problem with the idea of space-time. We can all intuitively come to some understanding about space. If we're talking in terms of geometry, Euclidean geometry, remember that's the three dimensions. Euclidean is X, Y, and Z, those three vectors, length, depth, and height. That's Euclidean mathematics. We can measure to a degree, we can measure the cosmos. So we can have some idea of space. But time is very intractable, very ephemeral. It's difficult to really wrap your head around what is time. We measure time. We say there's the present, the past, and the future. But when you start saying, oh, the fabric of, this is what Einstein was describing it, gravity as, the fabric of space-time and the ripping of the fabric, the renting of the veil, as I say, the punching a hole in the fabric of space-time, the space-time continuum. It all gets into sort of this science fiction-esque mumbo jumbo. They expect us to just accept, oh, space-time. Oh yeah, I know what that means. Yeah, okay, sure, yeah. I agree with your theory. As if we all really do understand space-time, when even the scientists don't understand it. But they'll put it out there as dogma, scientific dogma. The most familiar force is gravity. It is responsible for keeping our feet on the ground and holding Earth in its orbit around the sun. According to the general theory of relativity, gravity can be understood as bends and curves in the fabric of space-time that affect the motions of galaxies, stars, planets, and even light. Anything with mass makes a dent in space-time, causing objects to be attracted to each other. All right, let me try to put that together for you. If you take a cloth, let's say you lay a white piece of cloth on a table, and that table has a hole in it, that the cloth is covering that hole. You have placed outside the boundaries of that hole, outside the circumference of it, two marbles, one on the left, one on the right. Those marbles are sitting on the cloth, outside the circle, outside the hole. Now you take your index finger and you push down on the cloth in the center of that hole in the table, and it begins to push that cloth into that hole downward. Those marbles sitting on the cloth begin to move towards the hole in the table and down into that cavity that you've created with your finger in the cloth. That's what they're theoretically describing. The two objects coming together, the two marbles, represent gravity because the fabric of space-time is being distorted by you pushing on the cloth. Really? Gravity is an attractive force that draws two objects together. Its strength approximately increases with the masses of the two objects, but decreases with the square of the distance between them. That means that if the moon were twice its current distance from Earth, its gravitational tug between the two would be just 1/4 of what it is now. Despite being the weakest force, gravity works across infinite distances, making it responsible for the formation of the universe structure. Gravity works across infinite distances. Well, how can you say infinite? That's my question to NASA. If it's infinite, you cannot measure it. By definition, something that is infinite cannot be measured. It's beyond the limits of measurement. Measurement requires a beginning and an end. Point A to point B. results in a measurement of the distance between A and B. If B is infinite in its distance, you could spend your whole life trying to measure B from point A and never come up with the measurement, because B is at an infinitely distant location. So their use of the word infinite is completely incorrect. Thank you, Never a Straight Answer. We've learned so much here tonight. Now, my favorite, the electromagnetic force. The electromagnetic force holds together objects with opposite electrical charges, like the proton and electron, that make up one hydrogen atom. Now, you can do the same thing with the sun and the planets. Okay? You're talking about, let's say the sun has a negative charge and Saturn has a positive. Maybe we should say it the other way around. Let's pick a different planet. Let's say Earth. Earth has a positive charge. Overall charge is positive. The sun being negative, they attract each other. That's electromagnetic force. That can extend light years. Not infinite, but it can extend light years in distance and affect other objects in the cosmos. By the way, when we see a comet that has a tail and it approaches something like a moon or another planet, you see the tail, the direction the tail is pointing, the tip of the tail, that it will change. The electromagnetic attraction of a planet or a moon or an asteroid, depending on the distance, the attraction, electromagnetic attraction on that tail causes the direction of the tail to change. It points towards the object that is electromagnetically attracting it. It's not gravity that steers the tail. It's magnetism. Now that we can wrap our heads around. So NASA says our television sets are powered by electromagnetism. Light carries this force, which illuminates our houses at night, keeps electrons in orbit around atomic nuclei, and allows chemical compounds to form. That's covalent bonding. Okay. As the name implies, electromagnetism is the force that includes both electricity and magnetism. They are intertwined. A moving electric field produces a magnetic field, and vice versa. This is how a motor operates, okay? Like gravity, the strength of electromagnetism drops off with the square of the distance between objects and works at infinite range. Now, I might be inclined to agree with them on the infinite range, but again, it's the wrong word to be employed, okay? However, electromagnetism only comes into play for charged objects, and whether it attracts or repels depends on the charges of each. Two negative or positive charges repel each other, one of each attracts. And that's basic electrical theory, right? Magnetic theory, we understand that. While electromagnetism is stronger than gravity, it is often balanced out in large objects by the equal numbers of positive and negative charges that form neutral atoms. For example, Earth has a magnetic field due to electric currents in its liquid core. However, Earth itself is electrically neutral. Well, I strongly disagree with that one. Okay? It is not. If Earth was electrically neutral, we would not have magnetic fields. Yes, we have a north and south pole, oppositely charged, positive and negative, but the Earth itself has a charge state to it. All particles, all planets, all objects have a charge state. Okay? Either positive or negative. So to say Earth is neutral is completely bogus. Now, the strong force. The strong force holds together things that have the same charge. It's stronger than the electromagnetic force, so that's why atoms with multiple protons and neutrons don't fly apart. But most importantly, it holds together the quarks that make up protons and neutrons themselves. Each proton contains two up quarks and one down. Each neutron contains two down quarks and one up. Now this gets into the collisions, okay? So we're into the CERN area here. When we're talking about the quark gluon condensate, quarks that are held together by a force known as a gluon force, okay? That's a nuclear force. Nuclear forces affect our daily lives, but they work on distances smaller than atoms. The strong nuclear force, or strong force for short, holds together the building blocks of atoms. It always attracts and works at two different size scales and atoms. Okay, we'll move on through this. I don't want to make it too long for us here. As suggested by its name, the strong force is the strongest of the fundamental forces. It is about 100 times stronger than electromagnetism and 100 trillion, trillion, trillion times stronger than gravity. Now, let me abbreviate that. When you compare electromagnetism to gravity, gravity is 10 to the 39th power weaker than electromagnetism. So you cannot assign the orbits of the planets and the movement of objects in the cosmos to gravity. It's too weak. It's only electromagnetism that has the ability to attract and repel in the forces and distances and the masses of the objects that we're observing in the heavens, okay? The weak nuclear force can change a quark from one type to another, from up to down. That change could turn a proton into a neutron or vice versa. All right, so let's jump through this. Let's go back to strangelets. Back to CERN and their press release. So I'm quoting their own goal with run three. The LHC is back delivering collisions to the experiments after the successful leak repair in August, but instead of protons, it is now the turn of lead ion beams to collide, marking the first heavy ion run in 5 years. Compared to previous runs, the lead nuclei will be colliding with an increased energy of 5.36 tera electron volts. Okay, so that'll work out to about 10.72 tera electron volts. Okay. The collision rate has increased by a factor of 10. The primary physics goal of this run is the study of the elusive state of matter known as quark gluon plasma that is believed to have filled the universe up to 1/1,000,000th of a second after the Big Bang and can be recreated in the laboratory in heavy ion collisions. They are making a weapons system. Okay. So we're going to summarize and conclude early tonight. Everybody likes it when we're in school and the teacher says, hey, we're going to get out of class early today. And everybody screams and yells and throws paper in the air. Well, I'm not going to do that, but you can if you want to. We're just going to end up a little bit earlier tonight. Again, first of all, anything that CERN is doing, we don't need to be concerned about. We should be aware of it. It's my theory that it is there to open the doorway to the abyss. That's been my position publicly since 2013, and I've been writing about it and talking about it in non-public arenas, lectures and the like, since 2010. I first heard about CERN when I was being trained in Germany with regard to nuclear warheads. And CERN was referred to as being over the hill from us in the Cold War, West Germany at the time. And after I was discharged from the Army, I followed CERN, popular mechanics, popular science, things like that, Discovery magazine. I thought it was really intriguing. I thought it was cool. I mean, I'm looking at all this equipment and looking at what they're doing, and I always liked science. I always liked physics. So I thought it was pretty cool. But then I saw the statue of Shiva outside the headquarters at CERN. And that's when the spiritual part of this started. And this coincided when I went through, in my testimony, went through my point of anguish in life. And the Lord stripped everything out of my life. Everything. Everything in my life was gone at the time that he was revealing Shiva to me at CERN. Talk about a 180. All of a sudden, the Lord was showing me the spiritual side of what was going on, and I went down the rabbit holes of the spiritual side of CERN. Yes, I saw the Saturnalia, the Pope, the Jesuits, the Kabbalist agenda, all reflected there. And then I learned about strangelets, because there were a group of scientists that were warning about them being produced at Brookhaven National Laboratory, and that they were going to carry that technology over to CERN, and they were attempting to bring lawsuits to stop CERN from producing and Brookhaven from producing strangelets. And I've covered this many times in the past, so we won't tonight. When I found out about strangelets, it really shed new light on what was going on with CERN. My deep dive down the rabbit hole regarding Shiva also revealed the Roman temple site to Apollo, Abaddon, Apollyon. It's interesting how God just completely can turn you around. Things that you thought you understood or had some interest in, and all of a sudden he reveals to you the true spiritual nature of what is going on. Today, we are looking at all the things that are going on in the world, in life, economics, biology, physics, politics, the weather, the planet itself, and you can list bullet items under each one of those sectors of life, and that all adds up to, we're already in the tribulation. The mark of the beast has already been delivered. There's no necessity to wait for the Antichrist to be revealed, and then the mark of the beast will be delivered. Then the infrastructure for the Antichrist will be built once he's here, once he's revealed. Whether he's a physical person or not, because that's debatable. It is the time of the Antichrist, the enthronement of that leadership. All of that infrastructure, we've been saying this for years, it has to be built first. Before you can have cars cross the bridge, you have to build the bridge, right? Before you can enthrone a king, you have to have a kingdom built. A king doesn't build a kingdom, a king expands an existing kingdom. The infrastructure has to be put in place before the enthronement. I'm not going to get into it tonight, but I'll tell you, I still rail against every time I read about, hear about, see a pastor, a preacher, a minister, whatever, say, it's a precursor. The Antichrist isn't here yet. Righteous anger just explodes inside of me. Why? Because they're damning people to hell, to perdition, for all eternity. So we should be angry. And these so-called church leaders and teachers, leaders of the flock, should know better. But when they are asked a question, is this the mark of the beast, and they respond in an angry fashion, they reveal the spirit by which they operate, which is not the spirit of Jesus Christ. Their anger, their indignation, their being rude to a simple question that is politely posed to them, and then they respond in anger and impatience, that shows you their spirit that they operate by. That's a giveaway. At any rate, let's end early tonight. We know that all these things must come to pass, but look up, for our redemption draws nigh. God bless you all, and good night.